Hello and welcome to CigarCast, your weekly one-stop shop for all things cigar-related, including industry news, reviews, and everything in between. We're recording live from Crown Cigars and Ales here in beautiful Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm one of your hosts, Trey Debman, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by Mr. Shane Ring.
So, interesting, a lot of body language going on in the cigar shop tonight.
Yeah, more so than usual.
Yeah, people are a little more animated. I think it's because there's so much different environment. The weather here is beautiful tonight, and people are coming in and out and meeting with different people and having conversations. And it's really cool to see the different body languages. Of course, I live too much of my life like I'm narrating a shark documentary. You know, well, the fins are down, so that means he's in an aggressive posture. I probably should light my cigar over here and all. But
you are a very examined individual.
The unexamined life is not worth living.
Well, I've heard that.
And I wish I could credit who said that. Next time I'm going to use a quote, I've got to make it a point to look up who says that quote.
That's true. I'm not going to bail you out this time either. I'm just going to let it hang there.
You're just going to let it ride?
Uh-huh.
Email us, info@thecigarcast.com, and let me know who had that quote. And all. Everything is true. Everything on the internet you read is true. Abraham Lincoln.
Exactly.
So, anyway, let's light up some cigars and get this podcast started.
Let's do it.
What are you smoking tonight?
I am smoking something that I've never smoked before, and I want to say maybe you had one of these on the show when they first came out. It's the AVO 30th anniversary. This is the Maduro. They released, so 2018 is the 30th anniversary of AVO cigars, and so they've released a couple of different re-releases and new blends and stuff like that. This is the AVO Maduro, which they made for a while. It's essentially a Maduro version with a Connecticut Broadleaf wrapper of the AVO Classic that you can buy on the shelves at all times. This is the Toro version, and it's just, like I said, you know, I love the Connecticut Broadleaf wrapper, and I think we're going to talk about Broadleaf wrappers a little bit tonight. And, you know, I love every limited edition and special release that AVO does. The 88 being a perfect example of one of the best cigars I've ever had. So anytime I see one of their special releases on the shelf, and at a price point around $11 or $12, I mean, you really can't beat that.
Now, for an AVO, that's a deal. You know, AVO's always going to cost a little more, and they're always going to be worth a little more.
Absolutely.
AVO's just, it's a better grade of cigar. AVO Avazian started the AVO company. He was a piano player, and he noticed people liked to smoke cigars in the piano bar. And just a great story of a man that took his passion and really made it. He died last year. Mm-hmm. He passed away.
Yep.
But all of his cigars are named, you know, Improvisation, Dominant Chord. All of those different names reflect his love for music. And just a lot of fun. AVOs are just one of my favorite cigars. I've said it before. If I eat a ribeye steak, I'm going to smoke an AVO afterwards. Nothing beats that nice buttery ribeye followed by a nice AVO.
And I really think that's a great compliment to pay a cigar. You know, when you think about ribeye steak, you kind of think of kind of a next level dinner, kind of a, you know, it's usually an occasion. So if that type of environment makes you think of a particular cigar, I think that's a high praise for a cigar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I eat Spam and Eggs, I'm going to have a Baccarat afterwards. It just kind of depends. You know, your pairing of food and cigars is very important. But I'm going to smoke something we've never smoked on the show before. I'm going to smoke a Caldwell cigar.
All right.
This is the Caldwell Eastern Standard. We were doing poker in here the other night, and the rep came in and offered us a deal on some Eastern Standards because he's trying to get Caldwell cigars into this particular shop that we're in. And so we all ended up picking up a couple just to try them out. The owner really wanted us to know, is this something we would buy and all that, which I think speaks very well of Austin.
Absolutely.
And all. So this is the Eastern Standard. The wrapper is an Ecuadorian hybrid dark Connecticut.
Okay.
I'm not sure. How do you Ecuadorian hybrid? Do you grow it to like one stage in Nicaragua and then transplant it? I mean, how does that work? And we'll talk about Caldwell here in a few minutes because Caldwell's kind of a different kind of company.
Mm-hmm.
The binder is Dominican Habano and the filler is Dominican Habano Seco, Criollo 98 Viso, and Corojo Ligero.
That's a more detailed recipe for a cigar than I think we've ever had on the podcast before. A
lot of adjectives.
Yeah.
A lot of adjectives and Spanish words in that. Now,
well, the viso and seco are different primings from the plant.
Right.
So it's actually telling you not only what type of tobacco leaf it is, but also where on the plant it was primed from. And I think that's kind of interesting. I wish more people would give us that information.
Well, and Lajero is a different priming.
Right. Oh, I didn't hear you say Lajero, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, Corojo.
But that's one we hear a lot, and we just think strength. But yeah. You don't hear Viso and Seco nearly as much.
No, not nearly as much. And it's I've had one before. I'm going to smoke this one. And give it another chance, because the one I had before, it was not as stout as I like my cigars, and definitely not as complex as a lot of the Caldwell cigars I have. But I think this is their price point entry.
Oh, is it?
Well, its MSRP is $10.50.
Okay, yeah, that's about the least expensive you can get into a Caldwell cigar.
You know, I smoked the All Out Kings last year when it come out, the Jonathan Drew and Caldwell collaboration, and I was underwhelmed with that particular cigar. Now, the Long Live the King is Dead, I liked those.
I did too.
The Truth, the collaboration he did with AJ Fernandez, not as big a fan.
I haven't had one of those.
It was okay. It was not a bad cigar, but it was definitely not one that I'm rushing out to get another one.
And it was the higher end of the price point too,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, you were in the $16, $18 range when you were smoking that cigar. So I'm interested to smoke this Eastern Standard and kind of see, but Caldwell cigars, you don't see them at a lot of shops. Why do you think that is?
I think it, and I was talking about this with Austin a few weeks ago, they tend to fly under the radar for a lot of people. I think price point is part of it, but also it's, you know, you hear people talk about the comedian's comedian or the guitar player, you know, the person that may not have wide fame, but for the people that know. I think Caldwell Cigars is that for cigar smokers, the cigar nerds, the people that really understand what's going on in a cigar and that really want to taste something special and know what they've got. I think those are going to be your people that really gravitate towards Caldwell Cigars.
Well, and the Drew Estate brands are famous for having a cult following.
Mm-hmm.
At what point are enough people smoking it that it's no longer cult, that it becomes mainstream?
Well, a cult following has less to do with how many people and has more to do with how dedicated those people are. So when I think about Drew Estate as having a cult following, I think of those people that smoke exclusively Drew Estate. And I think that lends itself more to it.
Well, and now I'm smoking on a dirty palate tonight. I just had a cigar a few minutes ago before we started the show. So my initial blush on this cigar, it doesn't start out real hard, real strong. And what I remember, it's not a super full-bodied smoke. Mm. But Caldwell's not necessarily known for their full-bodied smoke.
No, they're going to be medium all day long for the most part.
What's your first blush on the Avo 30th?
Speaking of not being super strong, you know, like I said, it's a Maduro version of the Classic. So the Classic's a fairly mild cigar. This is in the mild to medium, maybe mild plus. It'll probably open up to medium body by the time I get through with it. But it's just, I mean, it's an Avo. It tastes like an Avo. It's Dominican, so it's very savory, not very spicy at all. It's a great follow-up cigar. It makes a very good encore. I'm not on a fresh palate either, which I typically never am. But yeah, it's complementing my previous cigar very, very nicely.
Well, and I straight cut this one because it does have a pigtail. It does come rolled with a pigtail on the end, and I never V-cut a pigtail. I always feel like they pigtailed it for a reason.
Uh-huh.
So I always do a straight cut, and also that pigtail, you can get the cutter basically underneath that pigtail and just clip as much or as little of the cap as you want.
Right. With a pigtail, I think that's considered the best practice for cutting that cigar is to just get under that pigtail. You can even just pull it off if you want.
So let's talk about broadleaf, since you're smoking a broadleaf cigar.
All right.
Broadleaf seems to be, like we spoke in the last show about sun-grown.
Mm-hmm.
Broadleaf seems to be something that's really come on strong in the last couple of years. And this is Pennsylvania broadleaf is kind of what this article I'm happen to be looking at is focusing on, because they just had the Pennsylvania Barn Smoker from Drew Estate. And this is kind of talking about Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And Connecticut is known for the milder cigars. And Pennsylvania broadleaf is not, I wouldn't say it's a full Maduro.
No, not quite.
I would kind of put broadleaf kind of in a grade between Maduro and Connecticut, but leaning heavily on the Maduro side.
Yeah, it's gonna have a little bit more flavor. Of course, Maduro just means aged, just means it's older leaf. So with the broadleaf, you're getting that strength that you would normally get out of a Maduro, but it's not a full aged Maduro.
Now, sun-grown or broadleaf, which is your more pungent?
Broadleaf.
Yeah, I would say broadleaf is closer to Maduro than sun-grown. Sun-grown being a little closer to Connecticut, but they're kind of all in that realm where you can get to just the various levels.
Yeah, and you get a lot of nuances out of cigars like that are wrapped with those leaves. I find just because they're taking a relatively mild palate and growing it in a way to bring out certain flavors.
Well, and the main difference in Connecticut and broadleaf. Connecticut can be used for either wrapper or binder. And all. Sometimes you do have a Connecticut binder if you're blending that particular cigar. They're both harvested by stalk cutting. So stalk harvesting is different than priming.
Right.
Priming being where you cut the leaves in order of how the top leaves, because your top leaves that get the most sun are always going to be your thickest, most full leaf.
That's your Ligero.
And then your Seiko and your Viso, your different cuts are going to go down in strength the closer you get. But when you stalk cut tobacco, you cut the entire stalk and you cure the entire stalk of the cigar, not just the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Which the Black Fire from the Kentucky Fire Cured Cigar, those are all stalk cut, just as another example of it being used.
You know, and Robert, the man that runs the farm where they grow the Kentucky Fire Cured, he had the best example. It's the difference in a ribeye and a bone-in ribeye.
Mm-hmm.
And all stalk cut would be your bone-in ribeye, and your primed cigar would be your just plain ribeye and your filet. That mm-hmm. kind of, if you want to quantify it to a food category, it kind of does that. Broadleaf is also sometimes used for snuff or chewing tobacco, where you don't ever see that in Connecticut. A lot more rustic look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got, we talk about toothiness on a wrapper. We haven't talked about a toothy wrapper in a while, actually, but that's what that broadleaf is going to, it's not going to have that sanded and polished look to it.
You know, and they're now doing the Isla del Sol Maduro. And I just came out at the show this year.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And that's the first one I have seen that is a Maduro wrapper that has actually been added, had the flavor added to it. The Isla del Sol is the low-cost Drew Estate flavored cigar. Mm-hmm. Isla del Sols, you get them for $4 to $6 each.
Is it flavored or just sweet?
It's sweet.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty much just sweet. It's kind of the Cuban sandwich style. You know, we've talked a lot on the show about low-priced cigars and how you accomplish a low-priced cigar.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it.
Right.
And all. And the Isla del Sol, not my favorite cigar. I always have construction issues with that cigar. And I'm just not a flavored cigar smoker.
I was about to say, it's not something that ever crosses my radar very much.
No, I don't spend a lot of time dealing with that and all. But I have another story that's really interesting to me.
Okay.
Here in Nashville, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a food truck.
That is true.
And food trucks seem to be kind of taking over the scene. You know, you went to the farmer's market this weekend, and they had the French food truck. They actually had a wood-fired pizza food truck where they had a wood-fired oven sitting on the trailer.
I went to Live on the Green last week, which is a free concert up at City Hall in Nashville, and they actually have an entire street blocked off with probably 14 food trucks lined up out there.
And by and large, food trucks, you know, they serve some pretty good stuff. I really enjoy eating a lot of food truck stuff. Most famous for me is, of course, the Cousins Maine Lobster truck.
Right.
If I'm headed up here on Tuesday night for a poker game, I'll generally hunt down the Cousins truck and get a lobster roll and a cold root beer here and sit outside and enjoy that lobster roll and that cold root beer, and it's hard to beat.
And I believe that's the most famous food truck we have in town. They've been featured on Shark Tank and a number of other, like MSNBC, and they've got it plastered all over the truck. They're very proud of it. But, yeah, they've actually had some national press.
But in France, there is now a cigar truck tending to Parisian cigar aficionados at the Eiffel Tower.
So do you smoke it in the truck, or is it just like counter service?
It looks to me, judging from the picture, like they set out seating and kind of rope it off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see that.
And then the guy sells it and all. And I've always thought that would be a great idea, to take a 24-foot trailer and set it up like a humidor and take it to golf tournaments.
There is a woman down in Atlanta that has a 20-foot or 24-foot Airstream trailer that she converted. And it's got a lounge-style seating as well as a couple of cabinet humidors.
Yeah, and that, you know, bringing the cigars to the people.
Yeah.
And all. And that, it's a good ideal. But this makes me happy. I don't think we could get away with this here as easy. I imagine there's all kinds of permits and red tape and so, people complaining about cigar smoke.
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was about to be a wet blanket because the issue...
Not you.
No, certainly never. The reason that she runs into some issues, and I think she actually doesn't operate it anymore. I haven't followed up in a while. In Georgia, for example, your tobacco license is tied to your physical address. So if you wanted to operate a second location, you actually have to apply for an entirely separate tobacco license for that location. So you would actually have to apply for the tobacco license at the golf course for the event, and then you'd have to apply for another one the next time you went somewhere, that so on and so forth. In Tennessee, I believe, in Texas, I know, for example, you can operate multiple stores on one license. So I think it would only work in a state where you could have a physical location, but then you were able to satellite that license.
You know, I hope I never have a time when I'm dealing with another human being whose goal in life is to complain about where people smoke.
Right.
Especially outside. Now, okay, don't smoke in a restaurant. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, here in Tennessee, there's no smoking in any restaurants. Didn't affect me in the least.
Right.
Matter of fact, I just wish they had turned, instead of having smoking and non-smoking, had children and no children sections of the restaurant. That would be great for me, because my wife and I don't have kids, and most restaurants we go to, we end up sitting at the bar because there's no kids there.
Right.
And I don't have anything against kids. Just don't have them. Don't want to deal with them on date night. Want to be able to go enjoy my meal in peace without somebody running around, you know, watch me do a flip in the middle of the aisle.
Right, exactly.
You know, so.
But we were out to dinner last night, and there was a kid screaming like a banshee at the table next to us. I mean, just, and as a parent, I've got the wonderful ability to tune that stuff out. Like, I don't even hear it most of the time. But this was just in particular so shrill and loud and incessant that there was just no avoiding it.
Well, and I think, you know, with the food truck craze going on, and we even have a truck in Spring Hill that serves gourmet dog treats.
And that might be taking it a step too far.
Yeah. I don't know why my dog don't taste two-thirds of what he eats anyway, because he eats it so fast.
Right.
Especially if he thinks it's human food.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's hardly necessary. But with the food truck thing happening, so I think the tobacco truck, I don't think that's a bad idea.
I think it's great.
I think if you could get the political red tape and all the busybodies just to shut their yaps.
Well, I think especially it's great for cigar smokers in particular, because even the places that allow smoking oftentimes will have some prejudice against cigars. You know, there are a number of places in Nashville, for example, that you can smoke indoors, but they won't allow cigars. And so I think having the cigar truck there, even if you bring your own, it kind of gives you that little peace of mind that, okay, it's not breaking the rules for me to, again, live on the green. It's outdoors, but you never know, you're on city property and the rules and all this and that. It'd be really nice to know that I don't have to look over my shoulder for security to come tell me I have to put my $10 cigar out after I've only gotten about 50 cents worth out of it.
Well, and, you know, every week I could read an article about this state, this county, this city banned smoking in public parks.
Yeah.
How, you know, okay, don't sit on the little spinny thing and ask the kids to push you with a cigar in your mouth.
Right.
But if I'm at the park and I'm in the hammock area and I've got a hammock stretched out and I'm, you know, 200 yards from the nearest human being and I want to fire up a cigar and enjoy it in my hammock, that should be my business. I don't really think that should have anything to do with anyone around me.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I don't smoke around kids. Like, that's just one of my rules. for myself. I don't, you know, we could, everyone has an opinion on that. We could go on forever, but that's just how I feel. So, but the idea, I think when people hear the word park, they immediately think of the jungle gym and the kids, but we have such wonderful green spaces here where you can just go stretch out a hammock, be yards away from anybody else. First and foremost, the exhaust coming out of the back of that leaf blower that's 4 feet from your kid is much more harmful to your health than anything coming out of the end of my cigar.
Not to mention the sediment that is stirring up.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of particulate that's putting in the air by him blowing all that stuff. I mean, that's far more damaging to your lungs than my cigar will ever be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Colorado, and I was at 6,000 feet of elevation, almost 7,000 feet. And everyone talks about how, you know, how much thinner the air is and how hard it is. I'll tell you what, I was breathing easier there. I got off the plane landing back in Nashville and was just, I couldn't breathe.
But that probably has more to do with humidity than it does with the
air quality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just air quality, and it's just a different, you know, people bike to work out there. The air quality is just better. So, you know, that's why I said, like, all the trucks and the smoke and exhaust fumes and all that stuff is doing far more damage than smoking is.
But climbing down off of our soapbox. So smoking.
But I like it up here.
Well, I understand, but the listeners may not like up there. We have to think about others. About a third into this Caldwell, really enjoying it. It's exactly as written. It's a mild cigar.
Uh-huh.
This is not like the Punch Diablo I smoked last week. This is a cigar that you could have first thing in the morning with a cup of coffee if you wanted, or you could have it 10 in the morning after you've gone to the gym and done all your yard selling for the day. This is definitely, lifestyles may vary. This is definitely the Eastern Standard. It's a good cigar, but I don't know that it will ever be one that I reach for, because typically when I reach for a mild cigar, I reach for a shade because I know it's going to be complex.
Right.
And what's your Avo treating you like?
It's also a mild cigar, despite the fact that mine is probably about 7 hues darker than yours. You know, it's a mild cigar. It's based on a classic, pun intended. It's based on the Avo classic. And so it's got that very rich Dominican flavor to it that I just really love. It's not doing anything special, but that's what I like about it.
And, you know, not every cigar you smoke has to be a life-altering event. Has to be, okay, this changes the standard. You know, the second half of this show, we won't talk about game changers.
Mm-hmm.
But not every cigar you smoke has to be a game changer. Sometimes, as you say, a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy the cigars I have that are just perfectly suited to the task at hand, and that's what this is.
So, speaking about new cigars out, I'm smoking the Eastern Standard. When we get back, I want to talk about the Western Standard.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that and more when we come back after this.
Shane here with this week's Cigar Under $8. I'm going to talk about a cigar that just came out at the IPCPR this year. It is the Punch Diablo. This is ranked as a full-bodied cigar. It is a Ecuador Sumatra Oscuro wrapper, and it has Nicaraguan binders and fillers. The first time I smoked one of these, it just really knocked my socks off.
You went cross-eyed.
Yeah, just now, and sometimes we argue with the ratings on the websites of what they consider a full cigar or not. They have this at the high end of the heavy rating.
Yeah, this is the fullest of the full.
Yeah, this is a cigar smoker's cigar, but very rare to find one this strong under $8.
Absolutely.
You know, the Brut, the Gordo, 6.3-inch by 60, they retail for $131.04 for a box. So you're looking at $6 a cigar, roughly, and right now Cigars International even has a deal where they give you 10 cigars free with that.
So there you go.
So great cigar, great price. I recommend everybody try the Punch Diablo. Welcome back to the Cigar Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Shane Reeves, sitting across from Trey Dedman.
Welcome back, everybody.
And Trey, this Caldwell cigar is good. And I don't, you know, it's so easy to say a cigar is mild and somebody say, okay, so that's not one I want. This is a cigar I enjoy, but it's not going to stun me at all.
Right.
And all, but I am still enjoying this smoke very much.
Yeah, it's just, there is such a good, I think a lot of sort of newly experienced cigar smokers, if I can use that term, so people aren't new smokers anymore, but are kind of new into making that transition, get on this hamster wheel of more, stronger. And there's you reach a certain point in your maturity as a cigar smoker, at least I did, where you start to appreciate some of the nuances and some of the blends and the complexities of lighter cigars. And I think that's what that cigar is meant to do. It's certainly what's happening with my Avo.
Yeah, just a good cigar. Now, this is the Eastern Standard, and Caldwell is now shipping the Western Standard. But if you don't live on the West Coast, if you don't live in California, Ohio, Colorado... Well, all right. Forgive my geography. And I'm just glancing down here at the ad and seeing names. And if you don't live out west, you're not going to be able to get the Western Standard cigar or Pacific Standard cigar. And but I like that. I like regional cigars.
I do too. You know, the Yellow Rose of Texas and Tennessee Waltz being a perfect example of that. The Crown Heads also did the Mason Dixon, where you got a different. When it first came out, you got it. If you live north of the Mason-Dixon line, you got a different blend than you did if you live south of the Mason-Dixon line. Now it's a split box, but mostly because there was such a tremendous call for that.
Okay, Geography King, where is the Mason-Dixon line? And you can't say between Mason and Dixon.
No, it follows a line north of Tennessee, like the Tennessee-Kentucky border, out to Missouri and Arkansas to the west. And then it actually sort of makes this weird little dogleg up above Virginia and finishes in Maryland.
Okay. Yeah, I stand corrected. That was a completely acceptable answer. But the West Coast, the Pacific Standard cigar, still going to sell for about the same price, about that $8 to $10 range for the Caldwell. Still going to be the same size as the Eastern Standard. But I like that because I'm a hunter by nature. I like to have to hunt a cigar.
Right.
And all, but let's talk about game changers. You know, in the last show, we spoke about the new Jaws V-Cutter.
Yeah.
And we talked about how the Calibri Deep V changed the game.
Absolutely. I mean, me personally, I never picked up a V-Cutter before that one. I didn't like them. They were too shallow. I didn't really see the benefit. And then that Deep V-Cut made me a V-Cut fan. Now, it didn't make me an overall V-Cut fan because I still only preferred the Calibri version, but it sold so incredibly well. And just a little bit of inside baseball, you know, Calibri really needed a win at that point. They had didn't have a real good faith from the community because of some ways the business had transferred hands over the previous years. Anyone who's been around the industry for more than 10 years will kind of know what I'm talking about. And without getting into too much politics, but they really needed a PR win, and they hit it out of the park with that cutter.
Well, it changed V-Cuts, because I have a Zycar V-Cutter that I bought, because to me, a V-Cut was just basically a substitute for a punch.
Yeah.
If I didn't want to take the whole cap off and just wanted basically an indention in the cap, I would use the V-Cut. And the Zycar V-Cut was very shallow. Basically just scrape the cap, and I would smoke cigars like that, and I probably haven't used that cutter now in 4 years. You know, it's sitting at home in the cutter box now because I have the Calibri Deep Vs.
Yeah.
What cigar changed the game for you? What cigar, the first time you picked it up, did you say, okay, probably never going to be the same for me?
The Ashton VSG was Yeah, I'm going to say the Ashton VSG. I had started, this was probably, I was still at Baylor, so this would have been 2006. This was an absolute game changer for me because it showed me what real strength in a cigar was, but without being strength for strength's sake. That is a tremendous cigar with pack full of flavor, and at the time was not nearly as expensive as it is now. It kind of opened my eyes to branching out and trying new things. Cigar Dave was on the radio back then on Sirius XM, whatever it was at the time, and you could listen to it on talk radio on Saturday mornings. And so I was driving back home from college listening to that, and he was talking about it. So I stopped by a cigar shop in Memphis and grabbed one, and man, it put me on my tail. I mean, it knocked me cold, made me sick.
What was your go-to cigar before that?
Was Don Tomas.
I remember Don Tomas.
Yeah.
I've had a Don Tomas or two.
But that was my go-to everyday kind of inexpensive $5, $4 cigar, I think, at the time. And I was perfectly happy with it. But all of a sudden, my eyes were open.
You know, it was funny because when I first started smoking cigars, I started with the standard CAO fare, the stuff you could pick up at, you know, the tobacco store. You could get the CAO Moon Trance or the Keelan Dream. Or
the Gold.
Right, or the Gold. I could pick those up, and that's what I was smoking. And then I started smoking a little stronger cigars. I got into the aforementioned Perdomo Sun Grown and got into some of those and the Perdomo Sun Grown Barrel Aged. Mm-hmm. And I noticed my palate was getting progressively harder to please.
Yeah.
I was getting less nuance from my cigar. I was looking constantly for that stronger cigar.
Right.
And then it was the Undercrown Shade. The Undercrown Shade changed it for me.
So that was recent. Cigar's only been out for 3 years, 2 years.
No, it was a couple of years ago. It was 4 or 5 years. And we'll have to Google when the Shade was released.
We will, because I feel like the Undercrown Shade came out after we had already become friends.
Well, the Shade kind of, you know, Willie Herrera blends it, and Willie and I kind of share a palate. Now, I'm not going to say my palate's anywhere near as distinguished as his, but by and large, if Willie blends it, I'm going to like it pretty well. And it kind of showed me that you could have a Connecticut cigar, that you didn't have to have a full-bodied cigar to really get that complexity, to really get that joy. You know, I remember John and I sitting here smoking them when they released, and him saying, I'm tasting something in this, and it happened Willie was here, and Willie said, okay, that's the Sumatra you're tasting. And that kind of reopened the doors to a lot of Connecticut cigars that I had been walking past.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite cigars, I smoke one almost every Tuesday here, is the DNA, the La Aurora DNA.
That opened the door for me for Dominican cigars. That was the first time, and we had Nate McIntyre on the show, and he was kind of talking about the difference between that cigar, the Andujo Tobacco, and the differences between the spiciness of Nicaraguan and the savoriness of Dominicans. And I remember I had smoked one at the beginning of the year. This is fairly new for me. And I was in Florida, and at the end of that cigar, it was almost like a meat-type aftertaste, but in a very, very good way.
Right, good barbecue.
Yeah, and it was that savoriness, that saltiness that you don't get out of any other type of tobacco that really, and it's why I've been on such a Dominican kick for this entire year.
Well, that I would say more than any cigar has ever changed my cigar life, I would say it would definitely be the Shade. I'd say it probably had more effect on my cigar smoking than any single cigar that I had ever smoked.
2015.
And also 4 years, 3 years ago.
3 years ago. Yeah, September of 20, so almost exactly 3 years.
Yeah, almost exactly 3 years ago. So that cigar was a game changer. And I'm interested, please post on Facebook and let us know kind of what cigars changed the game for you.
Well, the other one, around the same time as the Ashton VSG, and maybe even, because I debated saying this one instead, was the Perdomo Anniversary, or the Padron Anniversary series, sorry. That was a game changer for me, because you know, I had my first one of those very close proximity to that Ashton VSG. But ask me what cigar I'm going to pick up whenever I'm having a really good day or have something happen. It's that Padron.
Well, I think,
even paid $80 for one once.
Yeah, I've been in the $65, $70 range on Padrons before. And it's kind of nice to do that, especially you have a really good week and you really want to top it off, or you're going to be at the beach and you really want a cigar you can enjoy sitting there in a lawn chair. It's hard to beat that high-end Padron taste.
But that was the first cigar that became my, okay, this is what a very special cigar tastes like.
Yeah, the Padron should be a life-changing event in the life of most cigar smokers.
Mm-hmm.
The first Padron that they really get their hands on, because when you first come into the hobby, you're like, okay, boy, $20 for a cigar. I can't see that. The $20 for a cigar, that's a huge price tag and all. And then when you finally take that step, the Padron never disappoints.
No, absolutely not.
You can say this is what a $20 cigar should taste like. And, you know, I use the Padron as a standard all the time when we're talking about cigars. Yeah, that's an $18 cigar, but $2 more, I can have a Padron.
Right.
So the Padron's kind of a life-changing event. Now, what lighter really changed things for you?
I'm having a hard time remembering the name of it. It was the Calibri soft flame before the Julius that we both have. They used to have, and they still make it as far as I know, a very small single jet soft flame lighter. Same basic. It looks a lot like a DuPont. And that was when I fell in love with the soft flame lighter.
I will say the soft flame, you know, you got me into the soft flame. I'd never entertained the thoughts of lighting a cigar of a soft flame and that making a difference until you had showed me your Julius.
Yeah.
And I think it was back when I was having so much trouble getting lighters to actually work that I was ready to rub two sticks together enough to get a fire to light a cigar. You know, you offered me your Julius, and I lit with it, and that was a changer. That was really a turning point kind of in my cigar hobby, was that soft flame.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to spiral into another topic.
Okay.
This is something
You've been practicing your segues.
I've been working hard. I sit at home talking all the time. Ask my wife. So we were talking the other night, and she said, you know, I wish y'all would do a show and talk about how to help a cigar person who is obviously not a regular cigar smoker, and you see them in the up there by the lighters, and they're fumbling around, and they're trying to figure out what to cut, what to light, how to do that. My wife is wonderful. If we're here in the shop and there's a lady up there and she's staring at her cigar like a monkey doing a math problem, trying to figure out what she needs to do next to accomplish flame, Glenda will walk up to her and say, oh yeah, I really like that cigar. This is what I'm smoking now. And Glenda's tons of tact in getting her educated up on how to cut and light a cigar. I think that's easier for Glenda because it's a female-to-female interaction. On a male-to-male interaction, you sometimes get ego involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one, anytime you offer unsolicited advice, you're walking through a minefield because you want to be helpful, but you don't want to come off as arrogant or condescending.
Yeah, and, you know, good help at the cigar bar will take care of 90% of these occasions. But occasionally here at the lounge, he's pouring four beers. He's got three people in line waiting to buy cigars, and somebody buys a cigar, and they go over there and stand by the lighting station and are kind of looking confused. What's your approach?
I usually just ignore it. I'm sorry. I mean, I'd love to help, but it's just so it's a social interaction, and I don't like those, and it's out of my comfort zone. I mean,
So let's say there's a gentleman up there, and let's say he's shirt and tie, obviously just come from the law firm, stepped out of his Beamer in the parking lot and waddled in here and purchased a Padron 85th. And he's looking at that cigar, and you know it's going to be a crime against humanity if he messes up that cigar in the cutting and lighting process. You would still just let him roll?
No, I'd take a picture of it and make fun of him on Instagram.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the man of intense compassion, that is Trey Deadman.
No, I mean legitimately, I think the best approach is like you mentioned with the Glenda story of kind of starting up the conversation about the cigar. Have you ever had that cigar before? That sort of thing. If you're in the scenario where you can lead by example without saying, hey, let me show you how to do that. So in a perfect example, you're standing behind him in line, you get your cigar, and you just end up at the cutting station, and you just kind of make sure that he can see what you're doing. You know, that kind of lead by example. You know, strike up the conversation so you have his attention, and then just kind of, I think that helps.
Well, and the cigar lounge is one of those places that you can feel completely comfortable walking up to another human being, putting your hand out and say, hey, my name's Shane. How are you? And I'll encounter
you. It only works if your name is Shane.
Well, sure, but most things do. But, you know, my technique is always going to be to walk up and extend a hand and introduce myself. And, hey, I haven't seen you around here before. Do you come here often?
Your sign? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, that sounded a little bit too much.
I'm parked out back.
Hey. Yeah, that sounded a little bit like that. Never do that if you're smoking in a public park. But I walk up, introduce myself, and say, oh, that's the Padron 80th. That's a great cigar. You're really going to enjoy that cigar. And now watch that cutter. That cutter here is a little wonky. You might want to try with this cutter, and you might, you know, want to do that. And kind of feel it out, because, you know, some people are going to put up their shield. They're immediately going to be in dismissal mode. And when they do that to me, that's fine. Enjoy your cigar the way you want to enjoy it, even if it's wrong.
Right.
But in 7 times out of 10, that interaction is going to end with, oh, yeah, so you're here often. You see, how do you like to smoke this cigar? How does this cigar work? Especially if you see them looking at the end of it, trying to determine which end to light. And that happens more often with a Perfecto or a Salomon or something of that ilk.
And I've actually seen that on cigars with a footband as well. You know, I used to work in this shop, and there were a couple of times where I was cleaning out ashtrays, and I could see where the person had cut the footband off. And so the satin footband is still attached very nicely to the end of that cigar, but that quarter inch or half inch of that cigar is laying in the ashtray.
Yeah, in a Padron 80, if that's $7 worth of cigar,
right.
Now laying in the ashtray. Going unsmoked.
But I kind of sympathize with the guy who's struggling there, because a lot of times, especially on those nights, and I've talked about before, sometimes I want to come in and I just want to have a cigar and unwind. And I might be in my head a little bit. I might have my headphones on. And I may look like I don't know what the heck I'm doing, because I'm just not kind of in the environment. I'm just kind of in my own way. And I could, you know, it may not be that he's headed for turmoil. So I do think it's... And I'm especially one of those people that I'm not a huge fan of people offering unsolicited advice. So I,
well, and just by nature, I tend to be a little more extroverted than what you are.
A little?
just a touch, you know. I sometimes walk in the cigar shop and it's like Norm walking into Cheers.
Yeah.
And all, but I'm that way. I'm just a little more extroverted, and it does cause me a lot of mental anguish to see somebody up there fooling with a cigar. Now, here's the trick. If there's more than one guy standing up there, they're on their own.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be a one-on-one interaction. I don't want to interject myself into, because if there's 3 guys up there, there's probably 1 guy that knows how to cut it well enough that he can give him a little tutelage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times when we're having a wrestling event and I have some friends over that may not smoke that often, they'll say, hey, would you mind cutting this for me?
Yeah.
And then I can kind of show them how to cut it. And, you know, things like that really make a difference. But I think that's an important facet of the cigar lounge environment is the social aspect, the introduction, the talking to people. And I've made, you know, some really good friends that way, just walking up and saying, oh, that's a great cigar. Or, hey, last time I smoked that cigar, I made the mistake of, you know, cutting the wrong end or something. You know, it's hard for me not to get too technical. Okay, now you want to study which direction the wrapper is wrapped.
Yeah. Which I've heard you do on the podcast and also in here many a times. Okay, well, now you need to, and then 3/4 of a degree to the left, and then.
That's right. You got to know the combination if you're going to smoke that cigar. Right. It's printed on the box in there. You should have read that when you bought the cigar. But yeah, there is an element to that, and I'm always, you know, of the ilk to be helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm always the guy that's going to be a little more helpful, especially, you know, if Jonathan or Austin's working the bar and they're, you know, they serve beer here as well as cigars, and pouring beer takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it does.
And all, you know, especially a Guinness where you got to pour half of it and then wait 30 minutes and then pour the other half. There's a lot of times that they just get so tied up they can't give the customer that one-on-one. And I take a lot of ownership in this cigar lounge without feeling entitled. To me, that's what I strive for when I'm in another man's business, or woman, whoever, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But when I'm in a business, especially one I frequent as often as I do this lounge, I take a little ownership here. You know, when we have the poker game on Tuesday nights, I always make sure to put everything back exactly like we found it.
Right.
Never leave a mess. Never flick my ash on the ground. Never do things like that, because I do take a certain amount of pride in this, and I know all the people that work here. I don't want to make their job any harder than it has to be.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, I am always willing to lend a helping hand. It's just I tend to wait until people ask as opposed to interjecting.
Yeah, I'm a little more extroverted. Yeah. That's just who I am. That's just a part of who I am and all that. And so when y'all are listening to this podcast, I will be seeking adventure on the high seas. And all the cruise is coming. I have now repacked my humidor 3 times, getting ready for the cruise. Well, I have a 15-count humidor, and I'm going for 5 days, and I'll never smoke over 3 cigars in a day. It's just that don't happen in my life.
No, see, on a cruise, that would I'd be a 4 a day.
Yeah, I'm never more than 3, because that 4th one just loses so much. I don't feel like I'm doing justice to the cigar.
Well, if you start early enough in the morning, you know, at breakfast, and then you have another before lunch, and then you have one after lunch, and then you have one after dinner.
Well, and my cruise ship schedule is very, very lax in that get up, go to the gym. I go to the gym every day, regardless wherever I'm at. Even when I'm in Orlando, I'll at least go walk for an hour. I've always got to start my day at the gym, or else I don't feel like I have started my day.
Right.
That's my cup of coffee in the morning. You know, I'm used to hooking up to Ace and walking him for, you know, at least 3 miles. And generally a little more than that every morning, because that's my coffee that gets me up. So I'll do that, and then I'll have breakfast, and then I'll have that first cigar of the day. So it's usually, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock before I'm actually cracking that first cigar.
Yeah.
And then generally another one, you know, kind of at that 2 or 3 o'clock after my midday nap, and then generally one after dinner.
Yeah.
That's going to be mine. But I've been packing my humidor. Made a point to pack several shades, because that's going to always be my morning cigar.
Right.
Made a point to pack a couple of good Padrones, because I know I'm going to be on some pretty beaches and in a place where I can really enjoy
it. Really just sink your teeth into it.
And yeah. Always carry 2 feral pigs, no mm-hmm. more, no less. And I carry 2 feral pigs on every cruise. And sometimes that's a little harder, because I have to go seek out feral pigs and find them.
Right.
But I always carry a couple of feral pigs with me on the cruise, because that's my beach cigar. That's my cigar I can set on the beach, because generally in most excursions, you're going to be on the beach 1.5 hours, you know, maybe 2 hours. And time I get in the water and cool off and get out and set in the hammock and light up a feral pig, that's about the right amount of time.
Yeah. It's a smaller cigar.
It is. It's the biggest.
It's a shorter cigar.
Yeah, it's the biggest of the pigs that Drew Estate makes, the feral pig. But it's by far, if they said, okay, hands down, Shane, I want you to tell us your favorite cigar, I would definitely tell them feral pig. So that tends to be what I'm going to reach for while I'm on the cruise, especially the first night after dinner, after we've had a good dinner. And my wife and I always, here's a cruise tip for everybody. Go to the formal dinners. Carry some nice clothes. Don't eat everything at the trough. You know, deck 10 is always where the restaurant is, and it's decent food. But go to the formal dinner. Have the 5-course meal. Sit and really enjoy it.
And eat the things that you've never tried before.
Yes.
I've got to tell you, you know, I'm a fairly picky eater. And but a cruise is a perfect example of somewhere you've already paid for it, so you don't like it. It's better than trying something new out at a restaurant where you have to pay for it whether you like it or not. I had escargot for the first time on a cruise ship. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Never would have paid for it or ordered it out, but because I needed something for that course, and it was free, essentially, you know, it was already accounted for, go for it. What's the worst that can happen? Don't eat it.
Well, and more often than not, I'll order two appetizers. I'll go ahead and order the something special appetizer, because the menu always has something you've never tried before appetizer, and then they have shrimp cocktail every night. So more often than not, I'll order two appetizers. And I'll, because when I have a solid rule, the cruise is my time that I don't worry about what I drink, I don't worry about what I smoke, I don't worry about what I eat. It's the 2 weeks a year that I get to just totally give myself permission to eat anything I want, drink anything I want, and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big alcohol guy. Anybody that's listened to the show knows that's just not my
right.
shtick. But if I'm having a cigar and the guy comes by toting a tray full of fruity looking drinks with an umbrella in them and I want one, I don't hesitate to grab one and enjoy it.
Right.
And, you know, I think that everybody needs that time in their life. That time when they can just relax. And, you know, that's the beauty. That's why I love cruises, because I'll never see the people on that boat again in all likelihood. So I can just really sit down and enjoy myself. And the smoking deck offers a lot of camaraderie. And there is the people that are just stopping by there to smoke a quick cigarette.
Right.
And all. But a lot of times people come by and I'm there smoking a good cigar and they want to sit down and they want to know about the cigar and all that. And I love that part.
Oh, yeah. Well, that part is made for you. Like, that's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I love that vacation. But that about wraps it up for this week. Everybody out there, please get a hold of us on facebook.com/thecigarcast or on Twitter, on Instagram @thecigarcast. You can also take a few minutes, write a review on iTunes and Google Play, wherever you happen to listen to our podcast. Write us a quick review. It really helps out. You wouldn't believe how much that helps podcasts. With a million podcasts out there, the review sometimes is the only thing people have that really can differentiate our podcast from anybody else's.
Yeah, absolutely.
So until next week, everyone, have a great cigar and think well of us.